Hello, it is George Wolfe, and welcome back to another episode of Woo is the New, a space we chat all things woo-woo and spirituality to help women and mothers awaken, evolve, and integrate into the new age. We are here in the now, ready to bring you our third episode of our Astrology 101 series. So before we go any further, if you are here and you have not yet listened to episode 4 or episode 6, please press pause, head over there so you can understand your sun, moon, and rising signs, your three personal planets, and the zodiac archetypes, then come back here and continue. Now, if you have already listened to them, that is awesome. Let's chat about what this episode is going to help you uncover. Now, our birth chart is the blueprint of our soul, which means your soul chose to come into this lifetime with a plan. On our birth chart, we can actually see the areas of our life that will hold significance and that will need our attention. It is where we will learn our lessons and where needs to evolve. So to help us gain insight and to learn this information, please welcome star sorcerer, astrologist, and my girl, Brooke Croft. Hello, welcome back to Woo is a New podcast.
Hello, everybody.
I'm so excited for another one of our Astrology 101 episodes.
Yep, let's get into it.
Yeah, let's just jump straight into it. So I know the beautiful Woo listeners have been waiting for this episode so that they can understand their birth chart. So today we are going to learn about the 12 houses and what each represent. But first, just to help us get a clearer understanding, what do the houses of a birth chart mean? What are the houses?
Okay, so the houses are the where, and they are the arenas of life which the signs and the planets are working through. So they're really the foundational part of your chart, and they're the different stages of life. So each house represents a specific element in the human experience.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so they're the areas of life.
Yeah, like each house is basically a stage of life.
Okay, perfect. So let's just jump straight in and do a breakdown, and we're going to do all 12. So let's start with the first house. What does the first house represent?
Okay, so the first house is the house of self-action, and this is the house of the ascendant. So the first house is the area of life that deals totally with asserting and directing the self. This house is where we explore our identity and face the world. So planets in the first house show up very apparent qualities we have. When I want to see what someone is generally like, I just look to the planets that they have in the first house. It can also describe physically how someone is going to look. And this area of the chart is crucial to self-discovery. It's your demeanor and general approach to life. Planets in the first house are awake from early on, so it rules your early childhood. And planets close to the ascendant can actually indicate the kind of birth you had. And we form a close identification with the archetypes which the planets and the signs there represent.
Mm. So Paz has Uranus over his ascendant.
Yeah, so he's a quirky little thing, isn't he?
Yeah, so would that mean, could you say that?
So did you have a difficult birth with him?
No, I mean,
Was there a sudden shock or change in the birth?
He stopped growing.
Or was it quick?
He stopped growing. He stopped growing and he came early.
Okay, early, yeah, Uranus. Bang, comes out of nowhere. Uranus is like a lightning bolt. It's just like, pew.
But he is quirky. He's the one who will walk around with his soccer t-shirt on and a tutu and his like gum boots.
Yeah, Uranus beats to their own drum. They're just going to do their own thing, go their own way. I always say when someone has Uranus in their first house, their life is not going to be ordinary.
Yeah. Oh, so cool. All right. So let's jump to the second house. What does the second house represent?
So the second house is the house of self-worth, and this is the terrain of values, worth, and resources. So externally, it's your possessions, your income, personal earnings, and other symbols of security. And personally, it's your self-worth and what you have to offer and what makes you valuable. This includes skills, talents, and attributes. So self-esteem issues are addressed in the second house as well. It's sort of your intrinsic worth as a person. But the most common association is always money. It's how you make your money and your approach to money and spending it.
I have a lot of second house action.
Yeah, so you have Jupiter there. So when someone has Jupiter in their second house, they don't have to worry about money. You're very lucky. So generally people that have Jupiter in the second house, when they want me to read their chart, they never even ask me about money because they don't need to worry about it. And it's how you make your money as well. So you have your Mars there and you have your Venus there. And Mars is that physical energy and Venus is beauty. So if we can relay that all back to dance as well. So it's your physical body and movement. So for instance, when I talk about your approach to money, so I have Virgo on my second house cusp, and then sort of about halfway it moves into Libra, and that very much is my approach to money. I am Virgo to a T in the fact that I'm quite frugal. Like, I don't like to spend a lot of money on things. So I'm not someone that's going to go buy a designer handbag. I'll find the cheapest version of that handbag and buy it. And then I am Libra. I love to spend money. Like, I also love to spend money on clothes and fashion and pretty things. But the difference is my Virgo comes in and it's like, I'm going to buy everything on sale. And like, I wouldn't spend $100 on one item of clothing. If I could get five items for $100, then I'm going to spend it.
Right. So yeah. Okay. That's so interesting. All right. So let's jump to our third house. What is our third house represent?
So the third house is the house of self-communication. So this is the terrain of communication and perception in the immediate environment. It shows your communication style and how you learn. This house is the house of the concrete mind. So it's your left brain function, the part that is involved with rational and sequential thought. It's that fact-gathering aspect that we have. It's associated with our early education and schooling. So that's like primary and high school. The relationship you have with your siblings is also shown within this house. And it can also show your neighborhood. So the kind you're drawn to and how you participate within it. It's associated with writing, teaching, and local and short distance travel.
So I have my moon in the third house.
Yeah. So when you have your moon in your third house, you're very sensitive to your immediate environment. So you're going to pick up all sorts of moods and feelings in the environment with your moon there. But the moon is also nourished through third house topics. So by communicating, by teaching, by writing, and all those sorts of things.
Yeah, which I've always been really into. And I also, you know, when I'm emotional, I like to talk it out.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And so when you say your siblings can show up in the third house, what do you mean by that?
So for instance, I'll use mine as an example. So I have Pluto in the third house, and one of my brothers is a Scorpio rising and a Scorpio moon, and he has Pluto on his ascendant. So he's a Plutonian person. So he shows up in my chart just as Pluto.
Yeah, amazing.
So you might have, say, your moon there and one of your siblings is a Cancer or has a strong moon in their charts. Or you might have the sun there and one of your siblings is a Leo, or they have sun in the first or Leo rising, something like that.
And what does that mean? Do they have a specific, you know, connection to you in this life?
Well, yeah, I guess they're a focal point in your life. So they were sort of meant to be your sibling and you were meant to experience things with that person.
There's like a lesson or something.
Yeah. I always say that planets are lessons.
Yeah. Okay. Beautiful. All right. Fourth house. Let's jump there.
So the fourth house is the foundation of the self, and this is the terrain of family, your roots, and the past. It's our deep emotional foundational self, and it's our home life and family. So this is called the IC house, and it's dealing with our past, childhood, and our habitual emotional responses. It's sort of where you seek emotional refuge, and it's linked with our history, traditions, and culture. It shows your domestic environment, the style of your home, and your attachment to it. And because this house represents our childhood and our relationship to our parents, either the mother or the father will show up here. A lot of the time, it's more commonly the father in the fourth, but not always.
Well, Dan has his moon in the fourth.
Yeah, okay. So his mum. Yeah, or is his dad very nurturing?
They both are. Yes, they're both. Yeah. Like, his relationship with his parents is beautiful.
Moon in the fourth house, you didn't have to worry about your childhood. You had a very nurturing and loving childhood. Yeah,
and they're still so connected now. Yeah. And when I saw this placement, I was like, Makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. There's a real attachment to the family when you have Moon in the fourth. So even when you grow up, you still want to be close to your family, and there's still that emotional tie that you have with them.
Actually, Daphne has her Moon in the fourth.
Beautiful.
Oh, little Daffy. Can count on you, darling.
Yeah, she'll always be there.
So good. All right, fifth house.
So the fifth house is the house of the expression of the self. So this is the terrain of creativity and the giving of life. So it's the expression of giving of life through yourself to something. So, for example, a creative venture or a baby, because really that's the greatest masterpiece mm-hmm. we can create in life mm-hmm. is a baby. The fifth house wants to shine and create from inside itself. It needs to feel influential. So this is the area of the chart attributed to creative self-expression. And this could be painting, performing, or something like that. But even mathematicians or scientists can apply themselves to their work with such an artistry or passion as a Picasso could. So the signs and the planets in this house shed light on the possible outlets for creative expression. So this is the house where your inner child reveals its playful nature, and it is where you have the opportunity to express your personality and evolve through doing the activities that bring energy and satisfaction into your life. So some themes of the fifth house are recreation, creation, and procreation. Sex, dating, and love affairs, hobbies, they're all fifth house themes.
Mm-hmm. All right, so let's use an example, because you've got a planet placement in your fifth house.
Yeah, so I have a few actually, but I have Uranus and Neptune conjunct in the fifth house. And if we're talking about children, my daughter is definitely Neptune in my chart. So mm-hmm. my daughter is a Pisces rising, and she has Neptune in her first house. Mm-hmm. She's very Neptunian, so she shows up there. And then I have Uranus next to it, which scares me because that's like another kid. But I've also, Uranus is there, and I've actually always wanted to adopt a child. And Uranus in the fifth always signifies, well, it can signify having a child that you didn't biologically have. Yeah.
Very interesting.
Yeah, and also some traditions of astrology, if you look to the sign that's in the fifth house with the planet, so for instance, I have my Neptune is in Capricorn, and that's a yin sign, so that's a mm-hmm. feminine sign, so that can sometimes indicate the gender of your okay. child. So Denver is a girl, mm-hmm. and so I have Neptune there in Capricorn, which is a feminine sign.
Oh, that's so interesting. Very cool. And Paz is a Virgo moon in his fifth house, so what does that mean?
So he has a very strong emotional attachment to his children when he does have children, which he will, because that's a very childlike placement. But that's somebody who finds emotional satisfaction in creating and enjoying life. Mm-hmm. And he sort of will be very good in relationships. He's not going to be someone that will like to have a lot of casual sex, because he's going to get very emotionally attached to people as well.
Oh, good to know. My boy is not a player.
No, he's not a player. He's a sweetheart, yeah. Fifth house placements want to shine. Mm-hmm. And so when you have your son there, you really want to shine. You want to be the center of attention. Mm-hmm. But when you have your moon there, you almost naturally shine. So people mm-hmm. are naturally drawn to you.
So, so cool. All right, let's get to the sixth house. What does the sixth house represent?
So the sixth house is the house of the work of the self. So this is the terrain of giving from the self in the work or service that you do. It's about using your skills, your talents and trades to be of service to the world. It's work, but it's work on a routine level. So daily schedules, organizing your day and volunteering work. This house is also about the physical body and its health, diet, nutrition, and exercise requirements. So the sixth house explores the relationship between what we are inside and what surrounds us on the outside. The correlation between the inner world of mind and feelings and the outer world of form and the body. This house can show how you were designed to serve people.
And you have a lot of sixth house action, right?
Yes, unfortunately. I do. I've got Saturn in the sixth, I've got my moon in the sixth, and I've got my north node in the sixth house. So in traditional astrology, I will say this as well, they throw shade on some of the houses. So they say they're really bad houses, and that's not my approach to astrology. So they say that the sixth house is not a great house. They say the 12th house is not a great house. And they say that the 8th house is not a great house. I think they're the three worst. Mm-hmm. I don't prescribe to that. Maybe it's because I have a lot of planets in the 6th and 12th. But I don't like that approach to astrology, because it sounds scary when I hear some traditional astrologists talk about those houses and how bad they are and how detrimental they are. And I don't resonate with it, particularly because I do have a lot of planets in those houses.
Mm-hmm.
But the sixth house also, because it is routine and I have Saturn there, for instance, I actually struggle with mm-hmm. routine and just the daily organization of my life. I feel very burdened by life sometimes because mm-hmm. it gets a bit overwhelming for me, and that's my moon and Saturn's there. So I don't have the best placements in the sixth house, but yeah.
So with your Saturn there, does that mean that you need to learn
to
have routine and structure?
Yeah. So wherever Saturn is in your chart, it ripens with age. It's like a fine mm-hmm. wine. It gets mm-hmm. better over time. So most of my life thus far has been very chaotic with routine and organizing, and I've really struggled to implement it, but I'm passing through my Saturn return now, which we'll talk about another
time.
We'll
talk about that in a whole another episode.
Yeah, so I'm feeling like I'm getting a little bit more structure in my life, mm-hmm. so it's a lesson for me. I absolutely have to learn how to do it, mm-hmm. But I have my moon there, so I'm a bit erratic with everything. And mm-hmm. I also, if someone has their moon in the sixth, they're obviously emotionally fueled through serving people, but they're usually workaholics, people that have the moon in the sixth house.
All right, so that's the sixth house. So let's do the seventh house.
Yes, so the seventh house is blending through relationship, and this is the house that rules all of your one-to-one relationships. Your seventh house begins on the cusp of the descendant. It's the point of awareness of others, and it describes your approach to relationships and the qualities, along with the planets that you have sitting in the seventh house, that we want in a partner. So placements in the seventh house indicates the kind of partners we are attracted to and what we expect from these partnerships, and these can be personal or business related.
Mm. So I have a lot of seventh house action.
Yeah, a lot of seventh.
Like I've got Saturn, Neptune, Uranus, North Node.
Don't you have something else, or is it, that's a lot?
That is a lot. Saturn, that's four. That's yes. pretty.
And then you have Capricorn on your descendant.
So let's chat about that. So obviously with North Node, which we'll talk about more in depth in another episode, yes. but what does this mean for me with having all of this planetary action going on in my seventh house?
So if you have a lot of planets in your seventh house, because the seventh house, the planets usually represent qualities that you're attracted to, it means that you want a lot of different things mm-hmm. from somebody. So you need a lot of different things to feel fulfilled in relationships. Mm-hmm. So sometimes that's not obtainable, because if you've got Neptune there and Saturn there, they're extremely different energies. mm-hmm. So you need to find the balance between them. And you also can seek out these sort of relationships in other people. Mm-hmm. So for instance, you and I have come to the conclusion mm-hmm. that Dan is your Saturn. So mm-hmm. he's your reliable, stable Saturn that mm-hmm. you have there. But then you also have Uranus there, which is very different to Saturn. And your best friend has Uranus mm-hmm. in the seventh too.
So and Neptune.
And Neptune. So it's almost like you guys are that for each other. So you can seek out relationships that aren't romantic, that you can be fulfilled with those energies through. Mm. And they also, planets in the house, I find a lot of the time, they can represent relationships that you've had. So mm. relationships that might or not have worked. And so it's quite experimental mm-hmm. when you have all these planets. So for you, you might have dated Neptune, didn't work out, you thought you wanted Neptune, then you're like, no, turns out I didn't. Then you dated Uranus, and Uranus, yeah. nope, you didn't want Uranus, and then you finally settled with Saturn.
So. Yeah, that cycle is definitely yeah. in my life for yeah. sure. But when we found out that Summer has, Uranus.
I think you guys actually have Uranus at the same degree.
Which is
pretty very specific.
Yeah, so we definitely show up in each other's charts, which is pretty amazing. Yeah. But yeah, she fulfills, like that relationship fulfills me, and I don't need to seek it from Dan.
No, exactly. And that's the key to the seventh house.
Yes.
Is, seeking out those qualities in other people. Mm-hmm. But the seventh house is of close relationships. So mm-hmm. they're very bonded. So I think traditionally they just associate it with marriage. We don't do that anymore. So mm-hmm. they can be like your soul family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Amazing. So cool. All right. Eighth house.
So the eighth house is the house of transformation through merging. The eighth house has many labels. Because it is opposite the second house of my values, it is often called the house of other people's values. And that notion can be taken quite literally and suggest how we fare financially in marriage, in inheritance, or in a business partnership. However, that's pretty mundane, and the eighth house has many other meanings as well. This is the terrain of intensifying and deepening within partnership. It's the profound transformation through merging. With another person emotionally, psychologically, and materially. It deals with deep bonding within sexual and intimate relationships. It's the house of death and the house of integrating death. And also it's to do with taboos and joint finances and possessions, so taxes, inheritances, investments, loans, funerals, and also the occult are all eighth house issues. The eighth house is the underworld of the chart and it hides things below the surface. I'm definitely not one of those astrologers who hates on the eighth. I think your superpower lies there if you're willing to dig deep and uncover it.
Wow. Okay. I just want to say I don't know this about the eighth house because I don't think me or any of my family really have eighth house placement. So I'm like, feel like I'm just like learning so much now.
My daughter has like a stellium of Scorpio in the eighth.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. And I can totally.
I was very terrified when I first saw that.
Okay. So I really want to talk about this because I feel like if people are hearing that and they're like, holy shit, I have so much eighth house placements or like, what is this?
Okay. So that's why I don't prescribe to the
yes,
and also it's the house of death. People see a planet and they're like, I'm gonna die. No, yes, definitely not. So death is what is death? It's a transformational thing. It's rebirthing. And so simply planets in there can mean that through that planet in your life, it goes through a rebirth and a death and it evolves. It's almost like a phoenix rising through the ashes. And yeah, I think there's a lot of superpowers in the eighth house. So when I see someone's moon and sun there, to me, that's a superpower because it's such a deep, deep house. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like if you have your sun or moon there, you are just so in tune to the deep undercurrents of the world.
Oh, this is so cool. And yes, I think the death thing, I remember when I had my awakening and I'd, you know, do tarot and pull a death card and be like, oh my God.
Yeah, it's not that at all.
It's not. Yeah. It's like we need to re-understand the word death and it is a beautiful rebirth.
It's a beautiful, yeah. Yeah, we have such a negative connotation around death as a society and it shouldn't be that way. It's a very beautiful thing and it's just the symbology and the archetype behind it. So like I said, it's that transformation.
Yeah, beautiful. All right, so let's go ninth house.
So the ninth house is the house of the mind expansion through questing. So this is the terrain of broadening the mind's horizons through interacting with life. So questing for knowledge, faith, and a belief system is how you fit into the bigger picture of life. Here we strive for meaning, truth, knowledge, and an opinion, basically. The ninth house signifies what is known as the higher mind. So placements in this house describe something about the style with which we pursue our belief systems, as well as suggesting the kind of quote-unquote God that we worship or the nature of philosophy in life that we formulate. It's also associated with long-distance travel, philosophy, religion, differing cultures, and higher education, so like universities. It is the arena of the explorer, the adventurer, preacher, guru, the New Age master and crusader. It also governs the judgmental side of life with higher courts, legal proceedings, judges, publishing and broadcasting.
Very interesting. Dan's son is in his ninth house.
Yeah, so someone that has their son there, they're very fueled by learning. They get a sense of their own identity through exploring the world in general. So he might like to travel. Does he like to travel?
Yeah, he loves to travel.
So travel's a big thing for him. He's going to learn a lot about himself through traveling and through gaining knowledge and, you know, exploring all these different belief systems in life.
Yeah, he is just about to finish a uni degree whilst also, you know, working full time, you know, in his career. But yeah, very ninth house. And he is a top of his class.
Yeah, of course he is. Ninth house is one of the most positive houses. Yeah. So if you've got a lot of planets in there, like go you're doing well.
Yeah,
it's a great house.
So he's got a lot of action in his ninth house and Haz does too.
Yeah, he seems like he would.
I'm pretty sure Dan has his north node in the ninth house as well.
Oh, awesome. That's a great placement. So basically he's going to part of his purpose for incarnating was to seek meaning, truth and knowledge in this lifetime and to educate himself in that higher sense. So go out and acquire all this wisdom that he can use in the world.
Very, very cool. All right. Tenth house.
Tenth house. So the tenth house is the house of position in the concrete world. So this is the terrain of contributing to the world at large and constructing your position. So this is the MC house. The MC is what we call the career line. It's the highest point in your chart. It's the pinnacle of life achievements, our career, reputation, our title, and the position we hold. So it's our status and ambition. It's also our approach to a career. And this house can also show the shaping or more influencing parent that we have. And it's here that we can see what we would most like to be remembered as having contributed to the world. So if I want to look at someone's vocation, the first place I'm going to look is the 10th house.
Mm. So Winslow has her sun in the 10th house and her Mars in the 10th house.
Oh, very ambitious person.
Yeah.
That's like the two most fiery, ambitious planets that are up there in the 10th. So yeah, she gains a sense of her identity through her career and she has very strong leadership abilities. Mm-hmm. And to have your Mars there, you have enormous drive and ambition and energy to put towards your career.
Yeah, I can already see that now. I
think she's going to do great things.
Yeah. I think she's going to make some big changes in this world.
Absolutely.
Amazing. All right, so the 11th house.
So the 11th house is the house of group consciousness and future direction. The 11th house goes beyond ego identity and becoming something greater than what we already are. Planets in this house want to identify with something larger than themselves. So the main way this is achieved for most people is through a circle of friends or groups, a belief system, ideology, a cause, or an organization. Nothing can be understood basically in isolation, but must be comprehended as part of a system. So concepts, ideas, and goals are strengthened in this house by the joining with like-minded people. It's associated with alliances, unions, and protests, and it can be your attitude towards friendships as well.
All right, that's so beautiful. And my mum's got her moon in Taurus in the 11th house.
Ah, yes. So that's a really beautiful placement. So somebody that has their moon there, they're almost the mother of the group. They're very nurturing. They're going to make sure everybody's looked after in the group. They're very kind and compassionate and affectionate to other people's feelings. And they really understand the group's feelings.
Mm-hmm.
Moon in the 11th, though, has to be careful that they don't form their own, like they don't get lost in the group. They still have to be able to establish their own identity within a group.
And so Daph has her sun in the 11th house. So what does that mean?
Yeah, beautiful. So she'll probably definitely more be a leader of a group, and she's going to be part of her identity is going to be through, you know, evolving the collective and the group consciousness of the world. So she's sort of going to, a sun in the 11th makes a big difference in the collective sphere.
Amazing. That is so beautiful to hear. Alrighty, we are up to our 12th house. All right, let's do it.
Okay, so the 12th house is the house of spiritual contact, and this is the most complex house. It's hard to summarize the depths and dimensions that this house takes us in such a short amount of time. We could probably do like a 3-hour episode on the 12th house. This is the terrain of dissolving the ego and merging with universal consciousness. This realm is without boundary or reality, and it's understanding only the oneness of all things, which is the collective unconscious. Here we retreat from the world alone, dissolve our identity in order to find spirit. In this house, there is a mythical longing for union with our source and a direct experience of being a part of something greater than ourselves. I always call this house the house of divine homesickness, because it's almost like the planets there want to go home, like back to source kind of thing. And especially we both have our suns there, and it's like, I want to go back to my planet.
I feel it.
So traditionally, the 12th house, along with the other water houses, which are the 4th and 8th, reveal patterns, drives, urges, and compulsions which operate from below the level of conscious awareness and yet significantly influence our choices, attitudes, and our directions in life. The 12th house can also show how your time was in utero. So the nature of what is passed on to the child is shown by placements in this house. And I mean that in a psychological as well as a physical sense. Also, the 12th house is known as the house of karma, and it can give us insights into what we have carried over from past lives. Difficult placements in this house may indicate sort of troubled spots and energies which we misused in earlier lives and still need to learn to handle wisely in this one. So positive placements in this house suggest ingrained qualities which will serve us advantageously in this lifetime as a result of work done on them in the past. Also, dreams, institutions, meditation, prayer, healing, psychic phenomena, the secretive and hidden aspects are all the 12th house themes. Places of seclusion and confinement, such as monasteries, spiritual retreats, prisons, and hospitals, are also connected with this house.
So you and I both have our sons here. So, wow. Should we just talk about what this means?
Yeah, so having our sons there, it's it's difficult. We're lucky that we both have other strong placements that can sort of offset this, because mm-hmm. when some people have their sun there, you almost can get lost and not have that identity, because the 12th house wants to strip that away. So lucky mm-hmm. we have other strong placements that we can sort of get that identity and be ourselves in the world with, because like I said, the house is going to that 12th house is going to dissolve everything. So it's dissolving our egos and making us be something better and bigger than what we are, mm-hmm. which is difficult sometimes to mm-hmm. have your sun there. But also we've talked about how we both really need private time and time away from the world to recharge and retreat. 12th house is so hidden that it needs to come back to home, and we need to go back to source. Mm-hmm. So planets that you have in there will need to recharge and mm-hmm. have time to themselves.
Yeah, and I didn't realize, and especially after I had my awakening, I felt completely homesick.
Yes,
that's the feeling I felt.
I don't know if you're the same, but I'll look up at the sky and I'm like, I want to go back.
Yeah. I really had to understand why I was here.
Yeah.
And like, once I connected to my mission here on mm. earth, it made so much more sense, and I was able to start to be more present. But there was a really big chunk of my life after my awakening where I was like, literally, I think I spent it in meditation the entire time, because I was like, I just wanted to be home.
Yes.
And I didn't even really understand what that meant. But and then obviously getting that confirmation, finding out about my 12th house placement mm. and my son there, I was like, oh right, it makes so much sense.
It's just a homesickness. It's,
yeah.
It sounds sad, but it's not. It's just like, yeah, you feel this, oh, that longing and that sickness, like, oh, that'll be nice when I go back there one day.
But yeah, I do feel like when I'm in meditation, I go home.
Yes.
And,
that is the house of meditation as well. Yeah. So you're able to sort of like, ease that homesickness by doing that.
And I mean, even the astral travel. Astral
travel is really dominant in the 12th house, I find. Yeah. A lot of people that have strong 12th house placements are quite good at astral traveling.
Yeah, which is maybe something we'll talk about in another episode. Yeah. But I definitely find that it makes so much sense now having this placement.
You've got Mercury there as well, which is actually quite good. And your Mercury is actually conjunct your sun, so that's mm-hmm. because Mercury's there and that's your mind. You're literally a channel for mm-hmm. collective conscious communication, thought, information. So mm-hmm. your Mercury there is acting as that communication line for mm-hmm. unconscious guidance.
And it's crazy, I learned about channeling, didn't know I could do this. I mean, I think everyone is a channel, but obviously
it's very natural for you though.
It is crazy when I'm in a channeled state. Like, I was talking to my parents about this the other day, and they've seen me channel and information, especially for them. When I started to harness and actually understand that I could channel information, it was pretty cool. It was a pretty cool moment for me.
Well, actually, so people can understand how the different houses work, I might use you for an example. So because you have your sun and Mercury conjunct in the 12th, and we've just talked about how that's a channel for conscious and, guidance from the galactic and mm-hmm. from spiritual forces, basically. Mm-hmm. But then if I put the sun conjunct Mercury in the 3rd, that's a very different manifestation. So they're going to be a channel for very rational thought. So that's mm-hmm. someone that's going to be highly intellectual, but in the sort of like theoretic, factual, systematic sense. Mm-hmm. So like when they learn through school and all that sort of stuff, they're going to be very, very good at it. So mm-hmm. it's that rational information that they're channeling through. Mm-hmm. And for you, it's a spiritual information.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I was going to ask, because obviously I'm still learning myself, Winslow has her Venus in Cancer in her 12th house.
Yeah, I have that exact placement. So that's somebody who's... also that, because Venus is beauty, that's someone who finds beauty in very untangible things. So what they think is beautiful is not a physical form. It can be something, very spiritual, very mystical, very elusive. Mm-hmm. And also with Venus there, there's somebody who wants to love and for the whole collective and the unconscious. So there's someone that's very self-sacrificing. So it's like having the sun there, but almost like worse in the self-sacrificing sense, mm-hmm. because Venus wants to love and give love and receive love, and there's no bounds to a mm-hmm. person that has Venus in the 12th house, and it's in Cancer.
Yeah.
So it's like exacerbated. It's like, how can I help everybody and serve everybody and do everything that I can and give of myself to you? what she finds beautiful will be maybe not what other people find beautiful. She'll probably find what's inside people beautiful, their souls beautiful, mm-hmm. you know, that intangible element of people and their energy and their aura. She'll see that as beauty.
Yeah.
Which is such a beautiful thing.
So beautiful. Because I often like, I mean, this is an example of for, you know, those parents listening who are looking at their children's birth chart. So when I got the information on this particular website, this placement in her 12th house was like, she'll be very secretive. She'll be hiding her love. She won't be all of that stuff. And I was like, ugh.
Yeah.
It sounded so negative. And I was like, should I be worried about this?
Yeah, I don't see it because I have that placement. I don't resonate with that. I don't like hide my love and hide love affairs from people. And yeah, I've never resonated with the negative side of Venus in that house. I definitely resonate with the self-sacrificing side of it. But yeah, there's just such a negative approach. So you have to be so careful with what you're reading because, you know, and she might play that out for a year of her life and then she might play out the more positive side to it.
Yeah, yeah. And I think this is why we have to work with an astrologer to really start to understand our birth charts because there is a lot of negative information out there. Or it's so generic, right?
Yes, exactly. No, I wouldn't stress about that. I think that's a really nice placement to have. Like I said, I don't hate on the 12th. I love the 12th. I think it's such a beautiful house and I just think it just gets constantly like I know so many, especially older astrologers that just like, oh, 12th house, you're doomed. And I've got a packed 12th house. So I'm like, oh, I'm doomed. I'm not doomed, guys.
Yeah,
I'm
fully.
I'm doing fine.
Fully, fully. And I already see Winslow. She talks to her angels.
Yes. It's a very angelic placement. Venus in the 12th,
Okay, so now I know I did this when I first saw my birth chart and I had a minor freak out because when I saw my birth chart and I saw a lot of my houses had nothing in them, like so no planets in them, I was like, is this a bad thing? What does this mean? Does that mean like, you know, someone could look at their fifth house and have no action in there and be like, oh my goodness, am I not, you know, going to have children. Mind you, I have no placements in my fifth house and I have three children. So I can say that that's not the case. But what does that mean? So why do we have planets in some houses and a lot of planets in those houses versus no planets in some houses?
Yeah, so don't freak out when you don't have planets in houses. That's pretty much all of us. We're all going to have empty houses. And basically where there's planets, like I said earlier, there's lessons. So these are particular areas of life that are focal points for you. So it just means that you've either mastered the other areas of life or they're just not a focal point that you chose in this lifetime. So it's no stress if you have empty houses. There's always going to be a sign on the house cusp. So you're starting at your ascendant. And so let's use you for an example. So you have Cancer and that's the ascendant and that's the first house cusp. Then I would go down to the second house cusp. So then you'd have Leo on the second house cusp and then you might have moving around next. Then you would have Virgo on the third house cusp. So there's going to be a sign on every single house cusp. And basically you look to that sign to see the overall influence in that area of life. So it's going to tell you a lot of things just by that sign. So don't freak out and be like, oh, I'm dead inside. There's nothing in my first house or whatever. There's always going to be a sign there that shapes that area of life.
Yeah. Okay. So for example purposes, let's use my birth chart. So let's say my fifth house doesn't have anything in it, like I said, but it has the energy of Scorpio on the house cusp. So what does that mean?
Okay, so basically you approach love and dating with intensity. And sex usually isn't taken lightly when you have Scorpio on the fifth house cusp. And this with this placement, you can have sort of taboo hobbies, so engaging in things that are sort of metaphysical in nature or mystical in nature. This is the house of sort of delving deep into mystery and spirituality when you have Scorpio there. This house is all about pleasure and you'll need to be spending time alone in order to rest your mind and heart. So visiting the ocean or a body of water is great for Scorpio fifth house people because Scorpio loves water and allowing yourself to engage in pleasurable activities that aren't surface level. So you will find fun and joy by going deeper into your psyche and doing things that almost scare you, so taking risks. Your romances, particularly teenage and before you got married, might have been of a scorpionic nature. So they could have been intense and passionate or negatively. There may have been jealousy, manipulation, secrets, destruction or possessiveness. And more positively, it could have just been quite a transformative relationship as well. Because the fifth house is associated with children, with Scorpio in the fifth, it can be either a sacred sacred and transformative experience, or negatively for some people, it's a threatening one. So for example, obviously this is not the case for you, but I've seen it in many people who have Pluto in the fifth, which is the ruler of Scorpio. They have trouble conceiving, and with fertility and giving birth to their child might have been a little bit more difficult, or they had a harder pregnancy. But ultimately, people with Scorpio in the fifth usually parent with their intuition or out of instinct.
Mm. And also when it comes to like creative outlet or hobbies, you know, I obviously I'm using dance now, but I'm using it in such a different
spiritual way.
Yeah, yeah, and so it's sensual, it's deep, and I'm using it in such a different way to what I used to dance like, but I'm using it in such a Scorpio way. It's crazy. So I'm like, wow, it really is written in my birth chart. It's amazing.
Absolutely, yeah.
So I have on my in my ninth house, on the house cusp, is Pisces. So what does that mean?
So when you have a Pisces on the ninth house cusp, religion or spirituality play a large role in your life. There is like a yearning to merge with something greater than the self through a belief system or a philosophy. You'd make a good mentor or spiritual teacher. You're going to enjoy higher learning of a spiritual and a mystical nature. So Pisces on the ninth house gives an open and impressionable mind with a very vivid imagination. For some people with this placement, they can actually be confused about what direction to take in higher education. A vagueness on which subject to make a major area of focus can sometimes occur with this placement. But long distance travel might be a means of escape and a big spiritual teacher for you. Or you might go on pilgrimages and journeys overseas to find enlightenment.
So I know that, you know, we'll touch base on planets such as Saturn and Pluto, because I mean, I know sometimes we see these particular planets being Saturn, our big teacher. And I mean, a word to describe Pluto is destructive. So those words can often terrify us, right? When we see them. And then when we see them in the houses, I mean, I freaked out because Winslow has Saturn in her fourth house, so her house of family. So I was like, oh my goodness, what does this mean? And I also have Pluto in my fourth house. So let's talk about this, because obviously, once again, we can get a lot of negativity if we're just reading off the internet. But in actual fact, it's not the case. It doesn't simply manifest that way.
In one particular way.
Yeah. So just for our beautiful listeners who could be kind of freaking out like I did when I, you know, saw these planets in these certain positions, let's talk about my my Pluto in my fourth house, because what can that potentially negatively look like versus what it actually is in my life?
Yeah, well, like you said, that could indicate a negatively could indicate quite a destructive childhood, a childhood that wasn't the most pleasant. Or you had, say, a father who was very domineering, manipulative, secretive, or even aggressive. But positively, let's look to the positive side of Pluto, because there is always a positive and negative side to every single planet. So positively, your father could have been a very powerful force in your life, a very alchemizing force, a transformative force. So your relationship with him might have really been transformative for you as a person.
And that's exactly what my father is to me. In my life. And
Pluto is very healing, and your dad is such a healer.
He is a healer.
Yeah, exactly.
And I mean, when you even say aggressive, it's not even my dad. He's got in his both his Mars and his Venus are Cancer.
Yeah.
So like
doesn't he have a Pisces moon too?
Yeah. So he is like the most nurturing, soft and caring, soft.
But his force is strong.
Oh, he is.
And it's alchemizing, like I said. Pluto to me is just pure magic. Like I associate Pluto with magic, the higher side of it. So he's creating magic, and he's created magic in your life.
Yeah, so it's so amazing, because if I read off the internet what Pluto in the fourth house meant, it wouldn't have made sense to me. So
yes.
I definitely think it's very crucial that we seek professional advice.
Yes.
If there's areas that aren't quite adding up,
yes,
or
definitely.
You're feeling like, oh, that doesn't really resonate. What does this mean? Because you can actually have such a positive manifestation of that.
Yeah.
And I look at, so Winslow has Saturn in her fourth house. So let's chat about that.
Yeah, so we'll talk about it negatively at first. We'll save the positive for last. So negatively, that can be a very restrictive childhood, a childhood that you were deprived of something in some way. So it could have been quite unloving. Your father might have been very cold towards you. And so we obviously know that's not the case for your family. I mean, like, that's so clear.
Yeah.
So basically, Saturn in its highest manifestation provides stability, structure, and like she would see her father as a very reliable force. And I mean, he shows up as Saturn in your chart, mm-hmm. and he's certainly showing up as Saturn.
Hello, Saturn.
So he's certainly showing up as Saturn in her chart, and it's just that it provides her with that stability to grow and thrive. And I actually think to have Saturn there in a positive manifestation is a great placement, because as a child we need that structure and organization in order to be the best version of ourselves. So he's holding that space for her, and you guys are doing a good job in your home environment to keep things running smoothly and solid.
Yeah, and she's got a Virgo moon,
so she needs that. She would actually love Saturn there.
Yeah, so she loves structure, she loves organization, and her and Dan just have the most beautiful relationship.
Yeah, it's a very dutiful father that's there. Yeah. So, because Saturn is very dutiful, so he's going to be very good for her.
Yeah, so, so beautiful. So I think this is a perfect example of why we must not rely on the internet and we must work with an astrologer. So Brooke, can you please tell us all about how we can connect with you? Because I know you have a new system. Because look, You're putting some systems in place.
Look at me, my Saturn in the six. Oh my God, I didn't even think about that. It's fantastic. Look at me go.
Look at you go.
And we'll laugh because I'm someone who hates structure, organization. I have no systems in place in my life. I'm literally just like free range. I just fly around everywhere. So this is me doing my Saturn in the six.
Yes, and it's making me very happy with my Virgo moon.
Because you're like, what are you doing with your life?
I'm like, okay, girlfriend, we need to sit down and we need to put some structure in. So let's tell the beautiful Woo listeners about your new systems and how they can connect with you and what you have to offer.
Yes. So what I'm doing now is I'm doing, if you go onto my website, you'll find all the readings there. So that's www.mothtothemoon.com. And basically, if you want a full chart reading, I'll send you through a mini reading. So that's your sun, moon and rising in the houses. And then you can book a Zoom call with me. So that's where we dive deep into your chart and we can discuss sort of things we discussed today. And if you have any questions, you can ask me. And like we said, if something you've read on the internet isn't resonating, then I can sort of alchemize that for you and find out the correct manifestation. So yeah, I can do those Zoom call readings now. So if anybody wants to just go a little bit further, then they can book one of them.
Perfect. Amazing. Well, thank you so much again for coming in and talking Astrology 101. I absolutely love these conversations.
Yeah, and thank you to all your listeners who are actually diving deep into astrology and sharing cosmic wisdom with each other. I just love it.
It's so awesome. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Woo is the New. We hope these episodes help you dive deeper into understanding yourself and your loved ones. Come connect with me on my personal account at George Wolf and follow along the podcast Instagram at Woo is the New. We have more Astrology 101 episodes coming, but until then, I am sending you so much love. Bye.